Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 23, and with me today in studio for his last flight for a little while as my co-pilot is Matt Wang. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
That's good. I'm good, too. It's been really fun having a co-pilot with me. I've really enjoyed our time.
It's been super fun for me. Got my feet up. I'm hanging out watching people eat pizza.
Yeah, man. It's a good gig. I'll tell you. It gets me off the farm and into Brooklyn once a week, and they keep having me back, which is great. One of the things that changed while you were here, partially because we are personal friends outside of this radio station, is that it's been brought to my attention that we have cursed on air in a way that Wholesome Sharp and Hot did not do before. And what the listeners don't know is that I kind of talk like a trucker. And I am a mom and a teacher, and so when I'm alone in the studio, I'm much better at keeping that under wraps. But when my friend is here, then it's like, all bets are off.
I think it was all me.
It was all you. No, I definitely dropped an F-bomb because I got a text message from somebody who said that I did. So here's what I did. I brought in a change jar, which is James's college fund. So if we happen to curse today, you'll hear this.
Food stamps, and there was a...
Yeah, no, not that. Come on, brain. There we go.
It's good.
You'll hear that.
And it really has the heft.
Yeah, it has the heft. It has the... And when I do it right, it's the joke lands much better. But but that's how... Even in our home, the joke is that's how we're going to pay for our son's college education if I just put a dime in for every time I say the F-bomb.
Very nice.
So I'm going to try not to. But if we do, now we know. We have a little tip jar. So. So your schedule has changed, and
yes,
you are not going to have the opportunity to come and be on Sharp and Hot, but there's something that I don't want you to leave without us discussing, because we talked about talking about it, and it's something that people in every industry deal with, but in our industry it's so specific, and that is mental health in the restaurant industry. And you and I think we have a lot to talk about, so you can start if you want.
This is a big pet thought process of mine, because you know, when I got in this business when I was much, much younger, it was because it was, you know, the rebel ballsy thing to do. It was our pirate ship, we're gonna take it over. And then it sort of just became what I do, and now it's just Island of the Misfit Toys, but not in a good way. So if anybody knows me, I'm super into mental health, because what happens in our business is, well, the first problem is that every night is a party,
right?
Because we're around people who are drinking and having a good time every night of the week. They're not there every night of the week, but we are. So it normalizes this idea that every night is a party. Hence, we have alcoholics and drug abusers. I mean, it's just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge one. And it took me a long time to get through that and understand that, like, you don't have to be around junkies and alcoholics all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that took a toll on me. I mean, what am I doing wrong? You know, why are all these people around me all the time? And that was one. The other is just the amount of sheer work we take on.
Mm-hmm.
We work very, very hard. We work very, very hard in high pressure situations, and that also takes its toll, which again leads to drug and alcohol abuse, because we're all geeked up after work. What do you need to do? You need to have a drink or smoke a joint or do something to get a little bit of relief before you go to bed, because you work 16 hours that day.
And you got to wake up the next morning.
And you got to wake up the next morning.
Do it all over again.
You know, you work back to back, you close dinner and open brunch or breakfast the next morning. And like, there's only one way to get to bed. Well, there's no way to get to bed without being assisted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And again, I'm a lot of years into this, and I wish a lot more people thought about it. I've been a big proponent of the kinder, gentler restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the not killing yourself or not making others kill themselves to get their bones made.
When I was in high school and I worked in a restaurant, it was in the roaring 90s in the Hamptons.
Ooh.
And I have yet to see The Wolf of Wall Street. It is on my list. And my husband Mark's jaw hit the ground when I'm really excited to see that movie because I waited on those people.
Yeah.
Actually, technically, I bussed their tables. I was not old enough to be a server in this very, very high-priced, wanted-to-be-fancy restaurant on the inlet in Hampton Bays. Beautiful sunsets every night. And limousines, it was the 90s, would pull up, and 25 to 35-year-old people would be impeccably dressed, spill out of the car, having been all day on the beach, and then come and spend... I mean, I would drop checks for $1,200, and it's set up for me, that's what adulthood looks like. And right. It was a long road. I mean, I still struggle with talking about like what's wrong with me at now I'm 34 and a half, and I have yet to have a limousine and a $1,200 bill at a restaurant. That was no big deal. You know, like,
right.
And so being around it and normalizing it took a lot of work to get back to like, no, you have enough. Like, right. You don't have to live this excessive vacation every night. Do you have young people that you see in your line of work that you want to like grab and mentor?
Always.
Do you do it uninvited or do you?
Yeah. Well, I try to, I mean, there's very little voice of reason when, you know, there's young cooks that are ready to take on the world and you need to tell them that it's perfectly fine to explore and do and be. But then when you end up a total mess, which invariably happens, you got to rein it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're never going to make it over the hump. You're going to just be a drunk cook the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but is that really why you got into this?
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, and I think like any line of work, you can find a place that's comfortable that will let you be a drunk cook. Like you can make burritos down the shore and they will have you back every summer.
Absolutely.
And yeah. My brother's a golf caddy and it's a similar sort of like the caddies don't have any money and the money that they make is all in cash. And then everyone's a drug addict and with a gambling problem who visits ladies of the night.
And this is also a uniquely sort of a New York thing because it's where you really can't live a life above I don't know about the poverty line, but a living wage life and have a wife and have a kid and be a cook.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen. When I was living in Philadelphia, there are people who can be cooks, servers, and have just a long career, and that's what they do, and that's awesome. But in New York, you can get caught in a rut.
How do you feel about the... this is not on the show sheet. This just popped into my head. Normally, Matt and I prepare a small, you know, we have a cup of coffee before the show. But I'm going to throw this one out there. Maybe an opportunity for us to go toe-to-toe. How do you feel about doing away with tipping and making serving a profession?
You know, if it's something that will have equal or greater benefit on the people involved, I think it's great. You know, I kind of don't care, honestly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really affect me too much because servers will continue to get paid. I mean, I kind of look more from a back-of-house point of view.
Mm-hmm.
If, in a way, that system will benefit back-of-house people and increase their wages, then I'm all for it. I kind of get the feeling that that's not in the cards. I would love it if we were in a system where everybody got health care. I love the things that people are doing in California with having a 1-3% tax on their check that's for healthcare for their staff. I love that. I wish we did more of that.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I guess I think if anything was to shift, it would start in the front of the house in terms of professionalizing and not expecting people to work 16-hour days because that's who people see. That's who the customer sees. They see the server.
Right.
They kind of take the back of the house for granted.
Well, servers don't work 16 hours a day.
No. But I mean, in order for the restaurant industry as we know it to shift,
right.
If servers were the first step to become professionalized, not that I think that it needs to be unionized or anything like that, but chefemily@sharpenhot.com if you want to send me pro-union emails. because they interface with the public.
Word.
No,
I
it was my teacher history resonating in the back of my head. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really. I'm with you. I don't really care either way. I just would love it if there was a softer industry. I wish there was a softer restaurant industry that one could gravitate towards. When I worked on the line, the first place that I went, I could have been a chaperone. Like, everyone was so much younger than me. Mm-hmm. And it is this, like, even though there were chicks there, this, like, macho, work as hard as you can. And, like, I'm too old. Like, I don't want to work like that. That's not in my psyche. And I had to have the sort of entrepreneurial spirit to build the my own life, which doesn't pay very well, you know? So it's like this sort of, my quality of life is a lot better, but I'm also not making very much more than a living wage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely think the kinder, gentler restaurant business is happening in a lot of ways. Their companies feel that they need to give the opportunity for their staff to get health insurance. And you know what? Oftentimes they find that people don't take it because some people that aren't making very much money aren't going to see that money disappear even further. You know, there was a lot of controversy about the Obamacare thing. I'm not an expert on it. I can't really speak to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're moving in that direction,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
hopefully. But again, that's mostly, you know, I tend to work for companies that have more than one restaurant. In a situation where it's a single operation with a single owner, it's still really difficult.
Right. I guess by, you know, offering health insurance and that sort of stuff, it's very, very Long Island, offering health insurance, you get to reduce your employee turnover. And this is the 34 and a half year old Emily, who's also a mom, talking. I would not give young people a choice. You get the taxes that you're getting health insurance, and you're never going to see that money. And as a result, if you chop your finger off in my business or at home and I need you to work, you know, like, your health insurance is going to be taken care of. And I worked at a place for a month at a catering operation where they were having this conversation, and I was just watching these, you know, 24-year-old kids be like, no, I don't get sick. And it's like, no, it's not for when you get sick. It's for when you slice open your tendon by accident. And therefore, but yeah, that's just the nature of me being old.
It's not about young people to me. It's about the people who usually refuse to get the health insurance are people who are saving up to send money back to their home country, back to their folks somewhere else.
Right.
Those are usually the people that don't want to take any more money out of their check. You know, I had a situation recently where a cook that worked for me was a diabetic and had an issue, didn't have insurance. I mean, how much is that going to cost?
Right.
I felt terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and the health insurance thing is a whole other thing on which I am not an expert, but I would encourage anyone who is under the age of 35 to really consider their choice in not signing up. I don't want to say anything more about that. Okay, let's talk in terms of things that we can afford and not afford. We're going to talk about the article that was in the New York Times last week about the oysters at the restaurant in Williamsburg, one of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And the takeaway that I found from the article was one of my friends tweeted, come for the dollar oyster, stay for the $15 glass of Chablis. And that really rubbed me the wrong way.
Why?
Because I don't want to spend $15 on a glass of Chablis. And I get that. I get the math, and I understand that the reason that the oyster is a dollar is so that they can make money on the bar. Like, I totally get that, but mm-hmm. there's something in my psyche that I would rather pay $3 an oyster and $12 for the glass of Chablis, and that would make me feel better. Even though it's still $15, somehow the oyster to me should be the more precious thing on the menu.
You do know that they're not marking up their wine for happy hour, right? They're charging what they normally charge, and they're charging their 200-400% markup on wine, which is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's standard, and that's how you make money. And to me, first of all, that restaurant particularly, you're not even paying for the booze, you're not paying for the oysters, you're paying for the fixtures and the fit and feel of the place, because it just feels awesome.
Incoming.
And that's what you're paying for. You're paying for the scene more than anything else. And again, I love that place. I was there 2 weeks ago. The oysters are great. I'm not particularly in a drinking mode. Had a little sip of something. Tasted great. But, you know, that's just the business, Emily. You know, you spend more on booze than you do on food because that's where it's easier to make money.
Right. I don't know. There was just, and I think
one to four ingredients in a glass versus, and the manipulation is relatively minimal.
I think it's the commercial fisherman's daughter's upbringing that I'm like, no, it's, I don't want to be in a room of people who are paying to be part of a scene. Like, I get it, and I guess, again, this is me being old and living alone on a farm with my family.
I've been to restaurants with you. That's total bull. It's total bull. Like, you love the romance of being in a cool... Look where we are! Like, you're so full of it. It's unbelievable. Like, this is what we do, this is why you do it, and it's why I do it.
All right,
you
well
make
then...
A what scene. We make a scene for people.
But then, okay, fine. Then what... And this, I guess, could go back to the mental health. If we were on my therapist's couch, then I guess what I found discomforting in that article is that it put the mirror up to my face, and maybe I didn't love what I saw.
Right, right. Because we touched on last week the class issues associated with food. And There's a lot of class issues associated with food that come out in an article like that. And it's all about that scene and the limited seating availability, and I know about it and you don't. You know, there's cachet and currency in food now. Right. I mean, there always was. But now it seems more so than ever. Similar to what they say about the art scene and the art world now. It seems like food has carried along with that wave that there's so much cachet and currency in it that people just want to be part of it.
And, you know, and that is my stock in trade. Like, I'm trying to make people more comfortable with that industry. And so I guess that's why that article did touch a nerve. And that's probably the mark of an excellent article.
aren't you and by association me trying to make people more comfortable with food in general? Just
yes.
Sort of like fear, uncertainty, and doubt on their own cooking?
Yes.
And their own experience in the farmer's market or the supermarket?
Yes, but I feel like a piece of that is demystifying the cachet that comes along with this sort of like, I know about it and you don't.
Well, it's all about mystique and it's all about building that special place. You find this romantic thing. In the break, I'll look up a Richard Price quote that I love. But you make this magic experience for people, and that's what we give more than anything else. That's why you come for your birthdays. That's why you come for your engagement.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I think by, like, a Penn and Teller magic show, by showing the mystique and be like, this is how you can recreate it in this approachable way, that's what I'm trying to accomplish here.
It's called Kitchen Confidential.
Right.
And it's called everything
that's
else.
That's a trademark. Wait, like, that's almost a curse word. That's
really?
No.
It's just two words in the English language. I mean, I think so much of what's going on in people's interest in food is pulling away the veil a little bit.
Right.
You know.
And I'm here to help.
And seriously, pulling away the veil, you end up on the couch. You end up on the therapist's couch. Because the veil is nice. No veil problems.
Maybe we should reconsider.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's reconsider Sharp and Hot, the veil.
The veil.
Behind the iron veil.
Right.
So we have two questions coming up after the break. One is a follow-up. Speaking of pulling away the veil, a follow-up on the glove conversation of last week. And then our very own engineer, Evan, has a question that he asked me. And I said, hey, let's ask it on air.
Yeah.
All right. After the break.
Today's music is Naps by Space Ghost on heritageradionetwork.org.
Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel-on-steel, textiles, and forge-hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am Chef Emily Peterson, your host. In the studio with me is Matt Wang. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
I'm good.
So last week we had a conversation about gross things that happen in restaurants, and one of the things that came up was the use of gloves, food service gloves, and the false sense of security that they offer. And a call came in that I want to play because I want to just clarify that you and I were saying... Let me just play the call, and then we'll just clarify to make sure that everyone heard what we wanted them to hear.
Hi, this is Stephanie. I had a food-related question. I was at a kind of upscale market with different food stamps, and there was a one-man operation at a place or representing a restaurant called which is pretty well-known here in Washington, D.C., and the guy was making soups with his bare hands, grabbing all the various ingredients like pork meatballs, you know, the noodles, greens, putting them into a bowl and then putting it into the broth. And then at the end, he would put raw greens and other things into the soup on top and really kind of dunking his hands in there. And then he was handling all the money because it was a cash-only operation. So my question was, you said that the gloves don't really help with sanitation, and I agree with you that I wouldn't have a problem with chefs who don't handle money using their bare hands, but in this instance, watching him handle, like, all this cash and then handling all this food was really off-putting, and I even said something to him, and he looked at me like I was a total nerd and just not cool enough to be eating his soup.
So... what I said was that gloves give a false sense of security, mm-hmm. and that you can't wash your hands when you're wearing gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tweeted out an article about the chefs in California who it is now mandatory. I also read, I didn't realize this, it's also bartenders.
That's
to squeeze
crazy.
A lemon or drop an olive in your drink, all have to wear gloves. And so,
or use utensils.
While using utensils. You still have to, any... I can pull up the article. Any interaction with the food, basically, you have to be wearing gloves. If you think about the expense that a restaurant's going to have to spend, if everyone follows the rules, which is every time you change touching something, you change your gloves. So if you go from putting an olive into a drink to taking money to back to putting an olive into a drink, I mean, that's hundreds of pairs of gloves a night, and that's just a single bartender. I mean, assuming your bar's doing really well, which we
right.
all hope that they
all
are.
Right.
And then... So her question was, the chef is not wearing gloves, touching raw ingredients, and then handling money. And we can agree that that is...
gross.
Totally gross.
Really gross.
Absolutely gross. There should be some sort of hand-washing mechanism that wherever you are, if you're following like the ServSafe guidelines, so that you, even if you're on site, you're washing your hands, or there's a second person there who's only there to handle money. So one
right.
person's handling all the food, one person's handling all the money... and assuming everything becomes a cook... that whole story just, like, totally skeeved me out.
It's part of a cook's job when they're in an open kitchen is to know what and who are looking at them. And
mm-hmm.
they're on stage for all intents and purposes. You got to know what's going on and that people are going to look at you. You know, if you're in an open kitchen, you're not going to go there and break down a lobster in front of guests because they're going to get freaked out.
I actually did that.
You know, I go into a restaurant and If I see an open kitchen and somebody's working really sloppy, it bums me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think differently about the place, you know, like watching a grill guy like throw stuff across onto the grill. It's like, no,
right.
absolutely not.
Right. Yep.
Like, respect what you do. Respect that I'm here watching you, you know, give a little bit of a sense of the show, you
and
know?
That you care, that you're
and
like,
that you care.
Yeah, I want to see people who care about my food as much as I do because I'm going to eat it. And if what's being projected out from the person preparing the food is that they just don't give a darn, that was close.
Yeah.
Then I will, that will affect my experience right. in the restaurant. Like I totally agree. Totally gross to handle money with the same hands that you're handling food. Totally gross to go between greens and porky fingers. Like all of that is just gross.
All right. I'm a cook. As we've discussed, I'm a cook. I don't know how to cook otherwise than professionally. So I think that by right, my hands are always clean because mm-hmm. I wash them. Like I've literally been in positions where I've washed my hands so much that my knuckles will split because mm-hmm. it's just gross. So I sort of think that my hands are always clean. So I'll give dude a pass on the meatball thing, assuming that they're pre-cooked and seared and whatever. Because you're not going to put raw meatballs in it.
I think that's what she said.
Raw meatballs?
I thought she said raw. I think she said raw pork.
But like, I'll give him a little bit of a pass, but the money thing is super gross.
That's where you draw the line.
And there's no chance in hell that if there's any oversight at all on this person, that's okay. Right. There's no chance in hell.
And we don't know because I bleeped out the name of the restaurant.
Right. Yeah, right.
Okay, so our next question comes from our very own in-house engineer, Evan. Hi, Evan.
Hey.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. So as I was coming in, you had a question for me, and I thought, hey, let's ask that on air, because that's an excellent question for our sharp and hot audience. So Yeah. Shoot.
Okay, so I've been working here for about 4 months now, and I got into the habit of getting the same breakfast every day because I don't get a lot of sleep, and I cherish every minute I can get. So I try to get like the fastest breakfast I can get that will like keep me full as much as possible. So I go to the bodega near my apartment and I get a sausage, egg, and cheese on a roll and a bagel with cream cheese. And they're not, I mean, I love this bodega. They're nice and wonderful, but their food is not the best. And after a couple months of having this, you know, 3 to 5 times a week, I just generally don't feel well. And throughout the day, I have a stomach ache, and I mean, it's not terrible, but I think it's probably largely due to my poor diet. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for, you know, ways I can change up my breakfast and other meals that I can make quickly or get quickly and cheaply that will like be healthy and keep me full and make me not have a stomach ache all day.
All right. Thank you, Evan, for coming on air. I appreciate it.
Of course.
The New York breakfast of a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich on a roll is my own personal crack cocaine. If I were to have one, I would go on a complete and total meltdown, have one every day for the next 3 months, and just be living under a bridge somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not even kidding.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah, right.
You're living in a shipping container. So, okay, so here are my two recommendations.
Okay.
One is, do you own a slow cooker?
No, I don't.
Okay, for a very small investment, you can get a slow cooker and slow cook steel cut or Irish oats overnight in either water or milk and just put in the correct proportions. I think it's 2 to 1, 2 cups or like a cup of water and a cup of milk, 2 cups of liquid and then a cup of oats and hit go. And then the next morning when you wake up, you'll have this lush, melty, mushy, falling apart, home cooked warm oatmeal. And then keep in your cupboard a variety of mix-ins. And I would say the most important one to keep on hand is nuts, raw nuts, like walnuts or pecans or macadamia nuts, because that protein and fat is going to keep you full, where oatmeal on its own, you'll end up hungry fairly quickly.
Uh-huh.
The other option is I discovered quinoa flakes, which are like regular quinoa, but they're rolled, and then they only take like 90 seconds to cook. So you bring 2 cups of water to a boil.
Mm-hmm.
A pinch of salt, dump in a cup of the quinoa flakes, stir it, and it's done. And then you have the protein in the whole grain, plus you can do the same thing with the nuts, a slice of banana, some honey or maple syrup. And in the time it takes you to go in and out of the bodega, you have a breakfast that's going to make you feel excellent as opposed to one that's going to make you feel logy. And yeah. And yeah. I have a rule
about... Oh, it feels
about
so good. It
only
feels so
for
good.
A minute. Only for a minute.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the day, you feel like, I don't feel so good.
Yeah. Well, that sounds much better. I mean, today, I tried to switch it up. I got the bagel and cream cheese, and I got an apple and a banana. But I've already gone through everything but the apple, and I'm really hungry.
Right. So, yeah. So, yeah, you need a protein in there, which you don't have.
Yep.
And how much is that apple and banana if you buy it at the bodega?
I don't know. I got it from the natural foods place right around the corner here. And with the bagel, I think it was like a little under $4.
All right. That's not so bad. But an apple at the corner store is probably $1, whereas if you go to the grocery store and you buy 6 apples, you could probably get it for $2 for 6 apples as opposed to $6 for 6 apples.
And you know what I'm used to? The oatmeal I'm used to eating is just instant oatmeal. So, and I love the apple and, what is it, apple and cinnamon, brown sugar cinnamon or something.
Mm-hmm.
So if I put actual apples in it, it would probably taste even better.
It's going to taste amazing. Make sure you get some nuts in there.
Oh, for
you're
sure.
not allergic to nuts, are you?
No, love
them. Okay, good. Okay, so I teased some information on Facebook, and I have big news to announce. This is, I should have a drum roll sound drop. I don't have that. I know. I just realized it. I said we planned the show. Okay. I do my best. On Sunday, March 30th, yours truly, Chef Emily Peterson, will be competing on the Food Network's Cutthroat Kitchen, hosted by Alton Brown.
Mm.
And so I got word that I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks back, I was confused by In-N-Out Burger. I didn't get it. I was not in L.A. traveling for leisure. I was in L.A. because I was shooting, and it was something that I participated in, and that is all I'm allowed to say about it.
Okay.
Other than set your DVRs, because I will be on television, and it's going to be on television.
Cool. I have something to elaborate on.
Okay.
I've gotten some feedback from my people asking me about my fake veganism.
Right. You prepared the listeners. You prepared yourself for some feedback.
I did. And there was a lot of like, are you straight edge? No, I am not straight edge at all.
Okay.
The fact that I'm not really drinking, and the fact that I'm not really eating animal product have nothing to do with each other.
Okay.
And I just sat at Roberta's and had some seafood. Like, it's just that to give myself some parameters when I'm out in the world being hungry, so I don't eat bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches all the time.
I was going to say, and then you don't
I am
end
a
up
professional
under a bridge.
Fat guy. Like, I got to keep my bleep in check.
I totally hear you. I totally hear you. And I think that those rules are good. I've been trying to convince Mark to do something like that, some sort of discipline, just set us up for success. And he does not think that that's a good idea. Partially because I think we talked about this last week, we raised chickens, and so I eat eggs all of the time. But I was like, well, it doesn't have to be like that. It could be something else. But I don't want to give up drinking, so it's not going to be that. I'm not going to give up caffeine. So I am trying to convince myself that I'm someone who likes going to the gym. I have officially not been there in, I think, 6 weeks, but tomorrow might be the day. It's not today. I can't get there today, but maybe tomorrow. No, I can't get there tomorrow. maybe Thursday.
I don't know, man.
All right.
You just got to do it.
So, listeners, if you've got questions like what to make for breakfast, you can give me a call at 862-242-8599. You can tweet at Chef Emily P. You can find me on Facebook / Sharp and Hot. And listen, if you like what you hear, would you do me a favor? If you would head over to iTunes and just tell iTunes that you love Sharp and Hot, when new listeners are considering whether or not they're going to subscribe to the podcast, the most compelling reason for them to do so is because of the positive reviews that listeners like you leave. And I want you to know that I read them and I truly appreciate all of the love. And it's a really good sense of feedback for me that there are people out there who love what we are doing. And Matt, in the meantime, until we see you again, happy trails.
Thanks.
Enjoy your new schedule where you're not free at 2 o'clock in an afternoon on a Tuesday afternoon.
I think we should do Midnight Sharp and Hot. I would totally be here for Midnight Sharp and Hot.
I have a strict 8 p.m. bedtime if I'm not working. I don't know if you know that.
Sharp and Hot after dark. We can curse whatever we want.
We can curse whenever we want. I'll get rid of the sound, the sound jar for the curse jar.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter at @m_twang for pictures of my dog and obnoxious things about, well, negative things about the Boston Red Sox and obnoxious things about the New York Yankees.
And I understand that we are about to approach that ball season.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there will be things happening on the Twitter about that, of which I will not really care about. But I love you, and I'm really happy that you... I'm not going to unfollow you.
You can muffle the subject if you want.
I just glaze over. Okay. I have a strict 100... I only follow 100 people, and so you've made the cut, but, you know, a couple more followers, we're going to have a conversation. Until next week, everybody, thank you again for listening to Sharp and Hot. Thanks to Le Creuset for being our generous sponsor, and keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.